What's up, y'all? Here's a quick recap of last week.
Christianity, both now and over the last couple of thousand years, that we're actually pretty like traditional as far as centered around the person and work of Christ and all of that stuff. But I think what has become progressive around social issues and exploring some theology more deeply and stuff like that, I think people would definitely call us progressive.
It's almost as if going back to the original ways of doing things
feels
progressive because we've wandered so far away from what it looks like to be a biblical Christian. It's insane. We always say it on this podcast, but it feels like we've transitioned more to nationalism than Christianity. Welcome back to part two. I'm so happy you're here. Let's dive in where we left off. Yeah, you know what helped me? I started inviting them on the podcast.
Nice.
The loudest.
Hearing their stories?
The loudest, most angriest person I would reach out to and be like, let's have a conversation. And
what did you learn, man? I would love to know, like, what are your takeaways?
What I learned, and every one of them said it at the end of it, it was like, we didn't know you saw us.
Wow.
Like, we didn't think you would actually like, there's no way this guy with a platform like he has is going to reach out to little me and be like, hey, why did you say this? Yeah. And bro, I've had 6 hour long podcasts, 4 hour long, 3 hour long. Most of them hover around two, one by one by one by one. Cause I knew my goal going into it, their goal going into it was to prove me wrong for whatever reason that they thought I was wrong. My goal was to show them how much I love them and how wrong they were about me. And so when I would start the conversation with, hey, P.S., do you speak Hebrew or Greek? No, most. No. Okay, so do you have some kind of theologian background that I don't know about? I don't. Do you?
Sure.
No. Okay. So then at best, you and I are novice about this book. Like at best, we are just throwing darts in the dark, right? That's what we're doing because that's what I'm doing. And they're like, yeah, so all pride is gone, right? You can try to throw out scripture and all this stuff, but then I'm going to ask you, hey, what does that mean in the original language and what's the context that they were speaking to? Who were they speaking to? Have you done an exegesis on any of these things? Like if not, then tell me your guess. Because that's what you're giving me. So once the pride was gone and it was just based on me not trying to be right, but me trying to show them, hey, man, I operate in love and I love you. And that's the only reason we're talking. It just melted every single thing away. And by the end of every conversation, even the 6 hour one, which was with a psychologist who actually practices conversion therapy, he helps people, that. And so even at the end of it, he was like, I didn't know you watched anything that I said. I never thought you would ever invite me. And I'm sorry.
Wow.
Every single one of them. Forgiveness.
That's amazing.
And from here on out, they only comment positive. I even had one of them reach out to my wife and her sister and apologize because that was why they came after I came. I invited them on because they were calling my wife and her sister like all these horrible things.
Jeez.
And by the end of it, they reached out, apologized, asked for forgiveness. And it showed me that, you know, this veil that we have, this freaking social media thing, it really does invite us to be the worst of ourselves.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
If we get a whiff of the anger, and it's like false righteous anger, because I believe there's a righteous anger, but it usually revolves around justice and empathy is where that anger is sourced from. This anger is sourced off, we're right, you're wrong. It's tribalism. It's like, if you're not with us, you're fucking against us and we're going to come after you.
Yeah.
And so,
and the algorithms reward all that too, which is massively problematic.
Yeah. Which makes me wonder, like, how come, like, you have to be sticking your head in a hole to not understand that you're being played.
Right.
You just have to, because you can't really think that your feed is based on the good shit. And you can't really think that your Republican or your person cares about your religion. You can't really think that these guys care about what you are professing they care about.
No.
It's very obvious what's going on. And if you don't notice it, I feel like, bro, you're just playing make-believe at this point.
Absolutely. And contributing to the problem, for sure. You know,
it doesn't make any sense. B, were you going to say something?
No, I was actually going to go back and visit what you're talking about a little bit earlier, Zach, with liberation theology. I've read a little bit of James Cone, but kind of similar, but not similar. What do you think that looks like played out in your church and then in greater America? Like your average person who's going to church, right? Like they're wanting the best Christian experience they can get. They're wanting God. They're wanting to love people. What does that look like, them being liberated? I know you kind of focus a little bit more specifically on, you know, minority offset of that. But what does that look like for your average churchgoer to be liberated?
Gosh, I mean, I think it has so much to do, right, with, you know, the their intrinsic characteristics, their space in the world, where they come from, their background, and all that kind of stuff. Honestly, though, the first thing that comes to my mind is people being set free from the cycles of acquisition and consumption, you know, the kind of very capitalistic nature that we're all brought up in, right? This understanding that we're only as good as the things that we possess, the ability that we have to make money and spend money and stuff like that, right? And I think God has given us a lot of keys to be set free from those kind of shackles of acquisition and consumption. I think radical generosity is the main one, right? Mm-hmm. Like if we truly look for ways to be generous when we interact with people, and that's not just money, that's our time. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, Jesus was so famous for allowing himself to be interrupted. Everywhere that dude went, people were interrupting him. They were grabbing his robes. They were jumping in front. You know, they were lepers, bleeding women, you know, I mean, all kinds of stuff, right? And that dude just allowed himself to be interrupted constantly. And I wonder what it would look like for us to say, I'm going to be radically generous with my time, allow myself to be interrupted, allow myself to not be as productive as I, you know, productive as I think I need to be today, and allow myself to be interrupted. Like, you know, I had a coffee meeting this morning with a person who just came to our church for the first time last week. And it was supposed to be like 10 to 11, ended up going like 10 to noon, you know? And I'll tell you, like my little, you know, productive heart was like at 11 o'clock, you know, I was like, I got to get out of here, right? Yeah, it is not a lie. I used to pray, God, end this conversation because I have somewhere to go. Like, and I look back and I'm like, oh my gosh, like how much had I bought into the lie that like I am what I produce. I am the amount of meetings that I take. I am the number of words that I write or the number of things I put out in content, right? When in reality, like, especially as someone who calls himself a pastor shepherd, right? Like I need to be so awakened to the reality of being generous with my time and allowing interruptions to happen. But it's not easy. So I think liberation for a lot of us looks like being set free from these cycles of productivity and acquisition and consumption. And just the way that every message that we get, I mean, Manuel's right. A lot of them are be angry, be upset, be afraid. But then it's also like, this is maybe the most insidious part about it, is it's like, and buy this product and it'll fix it. I remember the first time, I bet I was in college, I was home for like Christmas or something, and I'm sitting in my parents' living room and my dad has Fox News on, and it's, you know, just this super intense segment of like the world is on fire and major cities are being burned down, you know, like they're coming to get your kids and, you know, they're coming across the border. It was like, you know, just so much incredible fear mongering, this whole like 10-minute segment. And then it cuts to commercial, and the first commercial is for gold. And it's like, you want to know the one resource that will stand the test of time, that is gold. So buy gold. And then I clicked, like my dad had been talking to me about how he was investing in gold over the last couple of years. And I was like, we're not even seeing how insidious these messages are, right? Yeah. That they go together so badly. So that was the first thing that popped in my mind when it comes to liberation.
Dude, man, it's so true. I love that. Yeah.
It's so countercultural. You know what I'm saying? Like when you think about what it means to be a Christian. And I remember, especially growing up, I grew up in a very charismatic setting in church spaces, and everything was really geared and focused towards revival, right? Sure. And this big move that God was going to do. And the amount of messages that I always heard on being countercultural. And it's very interesting because in a lot of ways, it's like the church of America that I've seen, that's kind of mostly put on a pedestal, not the ones who are like really doing the work, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But the ones you're thinking like, damn, you guys look just like everybody else. Like there's nothing countercultural about this. Yeah. Like you guys are still aiming for the same thing. Like in the sense of like, you just got all these pastors who are really just getting rich off of the people, 100%. You know, like to sell your book, to go to your friend's conference, to sell another book, you know? And so you're thinking, you're just like, man. And, you know, there's always questions that I ask myself that are kind of like little checkpoints in my faith, right? Like that kind of helps shape my ideology, my theology and all of that. And, you know, one of those questions is, am I free?
Yeah.
So for me, obviously that looks different than what, you know, for someone else, you know, but I love the way you answered that because that's such a challenge, right? Like that's as someone who is an ultra achiever, right? Someone who is like, I'm constantly going to be able to just sit back and say, hey, I'm not at what I produce.
That's right.
I am enough. Even if I wasn't busy today.
Yeah.
I'm okay. Even though my tomorrow isn't booked. So all those sorts of things. So
I learned that in the industry when, you know, and it's funny because, you know, me and B are going to do a podcast later about this. So this documentary, the Hillsong one, that, you know, it pointed out things that as I sit back and look at Christianity today, like I am not trying to hate on pastors that are growing these mega churches and basically working themselves into solitude. I've traveled to churches where I wasn't allowed to be in the same hallway as the pastor. Mind you, I love this guy because he preaches amazing and he's massive.
Yeah.
I won't say his name because I really believe everything in me is like, I love this dude and he loves God. But he has worked himself to a size where he cannot be in a hallway with his congregation. He has to be protected by security.
Wow.
And I was with another like celebrity, like a massive celebrity. If I said that guy's name, you'd be like, I love that guy. And we were like blocked off. Mind you, I just finished singing at his church.
That's crazy.
I had zero access. I've been in places where someone stopped the show because while my friend was preaching, like giving a little message in between songs, I sat in the pastor's chair. Someone came up and told me, you're sitting in pastor's chair. Wow. And I had to get up and move to the next chair.
Gosh, that's crazy, man.
These kind of things make me think, guys, I just don't see. And man, this is not me trying to speak against, like, I'm not trying to speak against pastors with big churches, but I do struggle with the idea of, like, I don't see this model.
Yeah.
I do see the model of, have a business, make a shit ton of money, support the church.
Yeah.
Right? Absolutely. So I do see the motto of like, yo, go find a hustle that makes you a crap ton of money. Drive your Bentley, drive your whatever. And then this church, everything that it makes, you just give that junk away. You just give it away. You just give it away. And you show the books, you show the receipts. Yo, I am hella rich because I knew I didn't want money from y'all.
Yeah,
I want to be able to say what I need to say, and I'm not worried about getting fired or your denomination. Because the second you are concerned about eating off of the church,
that's right.
You have to bend the knee.
It's hard, man. 100%.
And that was the one thing that, you know, I was so lucky at one point that it clicked with me and my wife. We were like, oh, we got to get rich somewhere else. And that's when we became liberated. Now... it didn't matter what song I wrote about. It didn't matter what I said on social media. It didn't matter what she said. We don't eat off of you, church.
Yeah.
So we
that makes all the difference.
Are going to be honest with what, you know, which I must assume is like, it is tough. It is tough because I know that when you're putting in the hours to make a church successful, it's hard to find time to do something else. But I almost wonder if it's worth telling the next generation of preachers to be like, bro, find a side hustle.
Totally.
And then let this church thing become just the thing you do because you're called to do it.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. I wonder if we would get different messages, you know?
Yeah, man, it's complex for sure. You know, I think because it's like, this is similar to me of like the tax the church conversation, you know? Like you see these mega churches with, you know, crazy amounts of money and massive properties and all the staff are getting crazy rich and all this stuff, right? And you know, you see the response of like, well, we need to tax the church, you know, because right. There's so many poor people and whatever, whatever. And on one hand, 100%, totally get it, get where that's coming from. On the other hand, what's going to happen is you're going to put a whole bunch of little churches doing great work in their communities out of business, you know, because they're not going to be able to do anything anymore. And so I think that what you just described works for a lot of people at the upper echelons of ministry, right? That can go out and do a side hustle and still have time to be able to go and preach or travel or whatever. But I know a bunch of, especially in rural areas all over this country, right, where this little local church has 80, 100 people in it, and it's the lifeblood of a town, you know, it's taking care of the sick people there, it's putting, you know, and like that pastor, you know, he or she needs to get some kind of salary from the community, right, so they're freed up enough with their own time to be able to do that kind of ministry, you know what I mean?
Totally, which I think I didn't finish that thought. When I was, okay, so let me be a little bit more specific. So I meant like, I did mean the upper echelon. So I did mean at some point as you're working yourself up to, which first is like, should you work yourself up to this amount? Because the second you can't meet with your people, then you're just a motivational speaker because you're not able to do real life with them, which is why we always 100%. Respected. It was Eugene Peterson who wrote the Message Bible. And he was like, once it gets 300 people, it becomes another church because that's as many people as I can remember their names. And I thought, bruh. But then he went and wrote this Bible. So I'm like, get rich off of that or get rich off your talent and keep your little 300-member church. And you can actually pastor each person. Yes. You don't need security. You don't need this. You don't need that. So I mean, is there, because from what I read in scripture, they didn't have buildings. They had houses. It was, you weren't allowed to. And I almost feel like, why not? Yeah. Like, why not have this very small, very not glamorous version of Christianity to where it's like everything is happening out in the real world.
Yeah.
And you don't need to come here to get it. Just leaders come here so that we can grow each other in the faith. And then you just go back out. And if it's you having three of your neighbors over, boom, that's church.
Totally.
You know what I'm saying? So that's what I really meant. I didn't mean smaller churches because obviously. And here's the conflict. The guy who I couldn't be in the same hallway with, he started in the smallest church ever, where he was the janitor. He was the one. Yeah. So it's like I'm not even like mad at him. I'm so proud of him.
Yeah.
But then it's like, how can you actually feel connected? On an individual basis, you know what I'm saying? I don't know. Yeah. It's really hard because I have zero judgments.
It is. And I think, you know, we church has started with 20 people. And, you know, as we've grown over 7 years and we're, you know, in an urban center, you know, doing church in a very different kind of a way. So I don't think we're in any danger of becoming a mega church or anything. But even to this day, as we've gotten bigger, one thing, like, I just agree with that so much. And so one thing that we've decided for me and our staff and leadership is that, so I offer to go coffee, Zoom, phone call with every single person who comes to Restore for the first time, right? So I get up announcements on Sunday and say, you fill out a connect card, you know, text this number, do whatever it is, right? Like, I will be the one that emails you or texts you the information, and then I'll invite you to go get coffee, go get lunch, something like that. And so I end up doing that. I did a couple today. I do 6 or 8 a week usually.
Wow.
And that means that I have to get some other stuff off of my plate, you know, that I just can't do based on time. But I've realized that like that totally transforms, not just like getting to meet with those folks and they get some time with pastor and we get to talk and all that, but like that transforms how I teach, you know, how the decisions that we make, right? Because every single time I'm writing a message, I am thinking about those coffee meetings. I'm thinking about the stories that I've heard. Every time we're making decisions, I'm thinking about this person that I just hung out with, this person that I got a phone call with, right? And it's like people are in mind the whole time. And so I always, you know, like we put, you know, my sermons on YouTube and cut clips and do, you know, whatever stuff like that. But I always think, like, for the most part, if somebody finds it online and it makes absolutely no sense to them because it's so contextualized to our folks, like, I'm so okay with that, you know, because that's ultimately my call, is to those group of people there, right? And to shepherd and care for them. And back to the interruptions thing, you know, even if I don't get to the thing that I need to get to because I've got three or four of those meetings in an afternoon, like, I want to make sure that's prioritized. Because, yeah, I think once you lose that, it's a pretty slippery slope right down to I can't be in the same hallway with somebody. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And it's like, I get it. And I think you don't get there overnight. It's like you're slowly subdued all in the name of success. Because what that means is just that your church is getting successful in a capitalist way.
Yes.
Go ahead, B.
Yeah. I was going to say a question for you. So we all know there's like that, you know, for an example, like there was some indie artists you really loved, and then all of a sudden they got signed by a big record label, and then they just like, they lost the sauce.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Or like when somebody loses their hunger, I just took Maddie through the Rocky series. Right. And so she got to see the evolution of Rocky Balboa. And when he lost his edge, hunger, what are some safeguards that you have in place for your church so that you guys don't lose the sauce?
Gosh, that's great, man. I mean, honestly, the first thing is one of the things I just talked about. Yeah, just like continually making sure those things are prioritized. I also think that it is, it's a lot about like surrounding yourself with people who don't care whether you hit it or not, whether you get a bunch of clicks or not, whether your tweet goes viral or not, right? Like, our staff team, every single one of our pastors on our team have been with me either since like day one, or at least for like, I think the newest one, she just came on staff as our executive pastor in January, but she's been at the church 5 years. I've known her for years and years, right? And so the idea is like, I want people who love me when I am not successful and love me when I am successful, and are not swayed, the needle's not moved by those things, right? Yeah. Because I think to your point, Manuel, earlier about like the chair that you sat in, you know, and the guy came up and said, hey, get out of that pastor's chair. The pastor didn't come up and say that.
Right.
And most of the time, the pastor wouldn't probably say that. And I, in my experience working in mega churches, the pastor's not even usually the one that initiates that. Somebody else does it, right? Somebody who is coming up, they see an opportunity to honor this person or to whatever, right?
Yeah.
But here's what you have to do to your question, Brandon. When you see that happening, you have to walk over immediately and say, absolutely not. Absolutely not. That guy sits wherever he wants. I don't have a chair. You know, that's not how this works, right?
Right.
Like, you have to so fight against any little thing like that in order to make sure that it doesn't get elevated out of control or something.
Yeah. Because that's ego, like, if you let it slide that one time, the danger in that is that you do feel important.
Absolutely.
How can you not? Somebody just fought for your chair.
It feels good.
Yeah, yeah, it's,
I,
like,
think we should be honest about that.
Yeah, I do got a chair. Damn, Skippy. like I had one time, I almost got like in a fight with a pastor and his team. Because look, I respect authority, but not really. Like, I am down to throw, like, no matter what. And I remember I was doing a show and the pastor walks in and he expected me to know him. And I did not know him.
Yeah.
And so he goes, his team goes, who are you? Why are you back here? And I go, who are you? Like, who are you? I'm Pastor So-and-so. This is my church. I was like, congrats. I'm Manuel. I'm performing at your church. What's up? Like, do you need something? And he was like flabbergasted.
Oh, yeah.
Because he fully expected me to be like, oh, my God, I'm so sorry. You know, da, 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 da. And I'm like, what's up, bruh? Yeah. Like, do you need something from me? Like, because at that point, I was like, I don't care. You could tell me, don't get on the stage, don't whatever. I was like, no skin off my back. Crowd is light anyways. It was going to be work. I have to get y'all riled up. Like, I'm good. But I literally had that attitude, and it's not good that I was that, like, that whatever, but it bothered me that there was that aura. And I continually, you know, meet that in people. Yeah. And I don't consider them bad. I just consider them, they let that thing slide.
Exactly.
One too many times.
A couple of times slide.
Yeah. And it's like you start feeling your own self. You start drinking your own sauce. And it's like, I am a little bit more important. I do deserve a little bit more space.
Yeah.
I'm preaching for services. Now I do need to unwind. And look, I'm like, as a human, I get it. But you also, if you work yourself to that point, like, what is the expectation? Do you really think you can handle all of that and not disconnect from the people? Yeah. So it's like, I guess it's really just a question of who is, what kind of pastor you want to be. Because I still think those are pastors. I still think that they are affecting change. But I think you do have to ask yourself, what kind, is it the kind that knows every single name and gets on Zooms with them? Yeah. Or is it the one that is okay with hoping my books are doing it, my whatchamacallit is doing it, you know, everything is doing it, I've done enough, I'm checking out.
Yeah, and I think it happens faster than people realize, you know? I mean, I think you let a couple things slide, you start to realize that it feels good. Pretty quickly, anybody that bumps up against you like you did to that guy and says, hey man, what do you mean? Like, who has chairs? Like, you know, I'm here to be at your church. You know, like, you start removing all those people from around you. I mean, that's the slope, right? Right. Like, you remove anybody that's not a yes man from your circles, right? Anybody that's not gassing you up all the time, you're like, you're out, right? Because it starts to feel really, really good. And then, you get to this point where there's pretty much no coming back after that. And the problem is, we being humans, image bearers of God, are not built for that. Like, we're not built to handle that. And so that's why you see all of these celebrity pastors falling. That's why you see all of these people with scandals. That's why you see all, and it's almost always power stuff, you know? Like, you get behind the scenes in some of those places and you see people acting nothing like Jesus, right? But it's just excused and enabled. One more thing to your question, Brandon, that I thought of is, you know, we're in a portable environment. So we meet in the middle school, and they've been great. Like, they let us install like 40 lights in the ceiling and speaker system and all, you know, but we build the stage, we put out the chairs, we do pipe and drape, we build a whole kids ministry. And every single Sunday, 95% of the time, I tear down with our tear down team. You know, like, I bring another shirt, or I pop, you know, my nicer shoes off, and like, when we do the chairs, I'm under the stage popping it up, and our whole pastoral staff does that. I mean, I'm not like special because of that. We all do that, and we just remind ourselves, like, we're blue collar, like, we're in this with, you know, and like, I don't like the shepherd sheep analogy as much, because, you know, sheep are like, it can be very like hierarchical and, you know, that kind of thing. But I think it works on some level. And I used to have a pastor friend that say, you know, real shepherds smell like the sheep, you know, like, because they're with them. Right.
Yeah.
And like, I want to smell like our people, you know, like, I want to be with them. I want to hang with them. I don't want security teams. I don't want to be whisked away. I don't want somebody running interference. Like, I was that guy at a mega church once. I ran interference for the senior pastor, right? I stepped in when somebody tried to talk to him so he could duck out the back entrance and get to his, you know, private office that nobody knew where it was. Like, I can't, and I think, you know, that's a big reason why I don't ever want to be that, is because I saw it up close, and it was one of the more disturbing things that I was ever around, right? And I just didn't want any part of it.
Yeah. And I mean, it's interesting because I'm sure the ego and the American, because it's very much an American idea in you, is like, bruh, but then that means no money. That means your funds, you know, that's going to hit your pocketbook, and you got to like contend with that.
Yeah.
And I don't know, you know, the answer, I guess I do know the answer is contentment. Like, I've seen God make people rich without them even moving their fingers. I've seen God make other rich people. Like, I have a friend who is my road pastor, Brad. I remember he told me one time, I was with him during this process where he had this house in Atlanta that was massive. It was probably like a 6,000, 7,000 square foot house, right? Mind you, he's just an evangelist. He does not have enough money for this house. But he was like, I want to have a place. I feel called to have a place where preachers and musicians can come and I can pour into them. And I've heard people say this before. This was the first time I actually saw it happen. Because usually we say that, that's kind of like the old, it's an honorable way to say, I want to be rich. You know, it's like when the athlete says, I'm just trying to buy my mom a house. Really, it's like, bro, you want to be real rich. And in turn, you'll buy your mom a house, but you want to get a lot of stuff for yourself. So he was like, you know, God, I believe you're going to give me this house. And he went as it was getting built. And he would pray in the no walls, go up to the top. He's like, this is where the altar is going to be. And he just prayed and he was like, yep, this is my house. So when it was like toward completion, he was one of the first people. He's like, I'd like to buy this house. And they're like, how are you going to pay for it? And he's like, I don't know. Like, I don't know. Bruh, when I tell you somebody gave him the down payment and then somebody called him randomly, some guy that met him like 3 years ago where he was preaching, and said, hey, how much is your how much are your bills for the first year of that house? And he's like, well, there's this, you know, I got this. He's like, okay, cool. Check in the mail for the whole first year. And the whole time he had that house, people were paying for it. Just random miracles.
Yeah.
And I was just like, oh my gosh. And since then, his life is a miracle. Somebody gave him a whole school in the middle of freaking Missouri. That he turned into a college for ministry.
Wow.
Built a ice cream parlor, like jobs, gave these kids jobs, like full out. And it was just given to him. And he just walks by faith. So when I think about what God can do, he always comes to mind because he's like, I don't ever stress about money. Yeah. He's never made it. And he has like 5-6 kids. So he should be concerned. Yeah, I'm going to raise these kids. And they just lived at the school with them. They lived at the big house with them. And they're taken care of. And they're the most sweetest people ever. So I'm just like, man, God, that really inspired me. And I, to this day, I don't make decisions based on money. I make, like, as far as purpose decisions. I'm an investor, so I make certain decisions on money. But I mean, like, my life's trajectory. I don't do it based on money. I do it based on purpose, you know?
Yeah. Oh, that's beautiful, man.
But anyways, I see we hit our hour. Man, I appreciate you, Zach. You're another homie, bruh. Like, this whole interviewing people thing is really sweet because I feel now when I go to Austin, I'm going to check out your church.
Dude, for sure.
I'm going to go say what's up.
Yeah.
Hopefully, this will count as the Zoom, so you don't have to Zoom me.
We did it. I appreciate that.
Afterwards, so you can give that to someone else.
Awesome. Awesome.
But I genuinely appreciate you, man, and your heart. And I think it's crazy. It's crazy to hear. You're obviously someone who's well-learned and well-studied, and I can respect you for that. But even more so, like, what I see in you most is, like, this insane balance. Which, for like what you said earlier in the podcast, coming from a white cis, you know, male who is, you know, usually attacked as being imbalanced because they don't know enough, like, you've taken the time to just balance your life and it's so evident. And I think it's freaking amazing. Just hearing you speak, I'm like, this is, you're a freaking cool dude, man.
That's super kind, man, for real. This has been a blast, like, just getting to know you guys, even talking before we, you know, jumped the podcast on, like, it's just so, like, y'all are, like, I feel like we could hang for a long time.
Yeah, bro. And we will. I'm telling you.
When let's
we
go make
to,
it happen.
When let's we go to Austin, it. Let's freaking kick it. My brother lives in Austin. So,
no way. Yeah, man. Y'all get down here. We should do something.
I'm going to tell him to check out your church because he's always looking. I'm going to tell him to check out your church, Restore.
Yeah, hit him up. I'll, and you can give him my info and we can hang out. That'd be great, man.
Okay, cool. Well, y'all, thank you so much for tuning in. All you guys that were watching live, even though, once again, y'all don't ask no questions. Like, what the heck? But whatever, we appreciate you. Share this. Hey, and I keep forgetting to mention this, but we do have a Patreon that we'd love for you guys to join or support us so that we can keep doing this thing. We're going to put Pastor Zach's info, church info, and everything in the description so you guys can find him if you do happen to be in Austin or in the Texas area that's close to him, so you guys could check him out. We fully appreciate you guys. And like we always say, we pray you find a seat at the table. But if you don't, you are always welcome at ours. Cheers.